This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time now to explore well-being with Diane Foster on Foster Wellness.
Welcome to Foster Wellness. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll be here every Wednesday as part of Wellness Wednesday at 11 a.m. here on Plains FM 96.9. You can also find Foster Wellness podcast on plainsfm.org.nz and of course on iTunes. And each week I'll post the link on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Diane Foster, Foster Wellness, and of course on Instagram, Foster Wellness. Hey, it's actually Monday today that I'm recording this. Should I say that? Don't know if I should. Anyway, it's Monday for me. And I'm back in the studio today, and I haven't been here for a few weeks because the last four shows that we did were all with my dad. And so I had company in the studio, which for me was, you know, like really exciting. And before that, Dad and Jackson had been on the show, my son and my dad. So I'm back in the studio on my own today. And it's been a number of weeks since I've been here. So it made me think, you know, yesterday, oh, what am I going to talk about? And, you know, these are back to my thoughts. So today what we're going to talk with is It Starts With. And I reflected on this when I thought about the shows that we did with Dad. And I've been thinking a lot about it because I've had some amazing feedback from you guys about what an incredible and amazing father I have. And you're absolutely right. You know, like my father has shaped me just as much as my mother has, mind you. And he really has shaped the person that I am. And I guess the reason I started when we started talking to Dad, I started with the two poems that he gave me, is because I feel that that has been fundamental to some of the shaping of the way that I think and my mindset over the years. And I guess that because I was given those poems at such an incredibly young age, like at the age of eight, I was given, you know, the two poems. One was Don't Quit and the other one was It's All in the State of Mind. I really did immerse with those two poems and understand them, you know, that no matter what happens in life that I shouldn't quit. And not only did that come into a message of, you know, a poem that my father gave me, and I guess at the time I thought it was about roller skating because that's what I was doing at the time and I was, you know, competing at a reasonably high level, and I thought it was about, you know, don't quit and just keep going. But of course that transferred into other areas of my life, of course. And not only did it, as I said, came in the form of a poem, but it also came in the form of the example that my father lived, and my mother, to be perfectly honest. So I wouldn't say that either of them had particularly easy upbringings. And obviously you've heard a lot about my father's story. And, you know, that is his story. You know, he had a particularly hard upbringing. There was a particularly traumatic event that happened to him, and that his, you know, his mother did commit suicide. And that, you know, he found her. And so while the poem was one thing, my father was a living example of that. And I think that that is incredibly powerful. While words may have been important so that I could sort of explain it to myself and understand it, knowing and feeling and seeing the example that my father lived was incredibly fundamental to what I believed and what I started to understand to be true. And while, as I said, my father's upbringing was incredibly difficult, I don't think he ever gave up on himself. And I don't think that he ever gave up on his own dream of his own life. My father has always been very clear of what his primary values are, and although we didn't talk about this a lot, you know, his desire to provide for his family is just so strong. And in order to do that, he has to be together himself. And so, you know, growing up and having, you know, a father that did have some traumatic events in his life, but having that desire and that wish to live, you know, the very, very best life that he could was just such a shining example. And I think that that's, when I look back, you know, like I think about, you know, where does my mindset come? And, you know, a lot of people talk about the fact that I have an incredibly strong mind. And I guess I do in some respects, but I guess I also understand that my mind is there to be used. And it's not just, you know, like I'm not a slave to my own thoughts. And, you know, like in reflecting on my father and his journey, one thing that I have noticed is that he didn't do it on his own. Yes, it starts with him. It starts with his desire to want a certain type of life and to not quit and to push forward into getting that. But also, he got a team on board. You know, at a very young age, he picked, you know, a really good partner to balance who he is in my mother. At a very young age, consciously or subconsciously, he picked a really good, strong woman that is a rock, you know, and is stable and happy and knows how to action those things that he wants in bringing up a family and having that stable, you know, when he might go a little bit up and down. And I can say this because, you know, I'm the one in my family that's up and down like a yo-yo within a certain band, and my husband is an absolute rock. So, you know, right from a very young age, my father started to build a team around him in order to be able to live the life that he wanted. So my mum was part of that, and her family was a big part of that. You know, the stability and the love that my mother and her family provided was very stable for my father. So again, it's that paradox of the fact that, yes, it starts with him. You know, it starts with his dream. It starts with his desire to want a certain type of life and to provide for his family and to be present in his life and to be happy. And it takes a team around him in order to do that. So it starts with my mother, and then, you know, like I think that he picked some interesting, you know, sort of support around workplace, and he was always really incredible at selecting staff to be around him at work. They were very supportive of him and incredibly loyal. My father had the most loyal staff. They would do anything for him in a work sense. You know, they were there for him. They would also, you know, be confronting and say, hey, Ross, you know, you might want to pull your head in, you know, because of that balance. But he was incredible at building a team around him. And I also remember him saying, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I know who to ring. I know whose phone number to ring if I need something. And not only did he have, you know, an incredible team at home and an incredible team at work, and he also, when the time was right, seeked out professional help to talk about what he'd been through and the life that, you know, he had had and what that meant to him and what that, you know, the stories he'd told himself because of those things that had happened and maybe some other tools and strategies in order to live the quality of life that he wanted. And I talk about that today because last week, I think New Zealand was just slightly shaken with the announcement that Greg Boyd had died in Switzerland with his family and that he had battled with depression for quite some time. And is a woman that hasn't had depression but has been surrounded by it with various family members and extended family, then, you know, you observe things. And I listened to Mike King last week and his observation of it, and it made me think. And it's always felt like quite a difficult topic for me to talk about because I don't suffer from it. I don't. I never have. And, I don't. And I thought about it, and I thought about, you know, we've just come off the back of talking with Dad and all of those things that he's been through. And I haven't talked a lot about, you know, necessarily the depression of other people and how it's affected me. But, you know, when I heard about Greg last week, I just felt so sad. And, you know, when I heard Mike King, I felt sadder again. Because I don't need to understand. I don't need to understand what it's like to have depression. It's not something that I have had or, you know, that I, as I said, I don't need to understand it. However, what I do need to do is I need to listen if somebody wants to talk. And I need to notice if something's not right. And at times for me, that has felt like a dark burden. The responsibility of somebody else's health has felt like an incredible dark burden on my life. They didn't ask me to be responsible for it, but, you know, when it happens to people close to you, you wonder if you could have seen more, and you wonder if you could have done more. And while I will continue in my life to try and notice more and try and be more accessible, I will balance that with looking after myself. And I guess, you know, the thing that I got from Mike King is that there aren't necessarily signs. Well, I may put my hand up and say, I will try and listen more, and I will try and be there, and I will try and be more empathetic. The person that's going through it is the one that has to say, put their hand up and say, I need help. And I'm not suggesting for a second that that is easy. But in order to get help, somebody has to put their hand up. And I guess that's my point of today, is that it does start with ourselves. It starts with ourselves to put our hand up to say, I need help. It starts with ourselves to put a hand up to say, I am going to listen. Because this is our community. This is our country. And while on one level, you know, like I'm much more immersed in a micro level of how things work, you know, on a how do we think, what goes on in between our heads, how is it that we're running our own lives, it does add up to a macro level of, you know, this is our community, this is our country. And our statistics on youth suicide and suicide in general, and our statistics on child abuse and abuse in general are not good. They are not something that we can be proud of. And as Celia Lashley put it, as one of her points in her recent movie, which I could not recommend highly enough, is that the solution to these problems is in our community. It is in our households. The solution to these problems starts with us. See, because to me it doesn't matter whether we look at suicide or whether we look at abuse or whether we look at child obesity or adult obesity. These big issues that face our country and the world, but specifically our country, are not going to be resolved by a government, in my humble opinion. No single policy will change any of those things. It has to be a multitude front. It has to be, you know, from a number of different angles. It has to start with ourselves. It has to start with our government policy. It has to start in our communities. It has to start in all of those areas. Because there's no point saying it starts with us and you just need to ask for help, yet there is no help available. And there's no point saying it starts with us and you need to ask for help and I'll listen if we're not going to listen. And I don't think that life has... I don't think life is... How do I put this? We are in an age and time where we have so much accessible to us, yet the things that are going through the roof are the things that we do to ourselves. You know, if we talk about wellness and if we talk about cancer, there is very few specific types of cancer that are specifically genetic. Our biggest, you know, killers in terms of, you know, health and wellness are cancer, heart disease, diabetes. All of them, in varying degrees, are lifestyle disease. And again, the solution to that is it starts with us. And it starts with government policy, and it starts with community. You know, I've heard so many discussions about, you know, sugar taxes and will it work and all of that sort of stuff. And it's like, it's not one answer. Food to table, garden to table in schools is part of the solution. Not having, you know, cheap and cheerful dairies selling crap food outside our schools is another answer. Not having that food in the schools is another answer. You know, I can't think of the social enterprise that it's called. I think it's Make Lunch or something like that. Lunch to where, you know, you buy a lunch and then a kid at school gets a lunch. That's part of the answer. Because, you know, like the one thing that impresses upon me with all of these sort of like social and, you know, situational things that we confront as a society is that, you know, fine, I'm doing okay. But that's not good enough. Because, you know, like if you're sitting back and you're thinking, it's okay, I'm doing okay and life's pretty tough and I really want that TV and I want a second house and I want another car and I want this and I want that, but I'm okay, I'm doing okay. It's not enough as a community. It's not enough for us to just say it's somebody else's problem. There are micro things that we can do in our own lives and that we need to step up to and we need to put a hand up to. And there's changes within government around policy and around support and around where we prioritise money. And then as a community, around what's important to us. Is my most important value that I do better than everybody else? Or would I sooner us all do well? I can't answer that for you. But I can answer it for me. Because what I worry about is my child living in a world where those other things in our community will of course start to affect my bubble. Because I would say that I live in a bubble. I'm being really honest here. I live in a bubble. I don't go out on Saturday nights. I don't see drunk people. I live in this little bubble where I walk to school with my son and I, you know, we live in an area where, you know, it's a decile 10 school. There is not conversations of, you know, my son doesn't, or my son's friends don't have enough to eat. That's not part of our, you know, conversation or part of our world. And living in my bubble isn't really enough, you know, because I am part of a greater community. And I think that if things don't start with us and if we don't step up, then, you know, that greater community and the things that impact on others will start impacting on ourselves. Quite simply, from an economical point of view, because, you know, you do hear the odd person saying, people just need to work harder. Awesome. Just remember one thing. In 1960, the average house price was twice that of the average income. It is now 9 times that. We are living in a different world. It is an entirely different world. Our children will have jobs that are not invented yet. Change is coming whether we like it or not. And it does start with us. And we do need to step up. And we do need to put our hand up if we need help. And I'm not suggesting for a second that it's easy. And I was about to say I don't necessarily understand it, but maybe I do in a different way. Because when I tell my story, I tell it in a way that's, you know, entertaining and we get a few good laughs about it and I talk about funny little oncology men and long socks and sandals and walking shorts and I talk about my husband performing well under pressure when I decided we wanted to have a baby when I thought I was well and I tell it in a way that's, you know, entertaining and all of that. But let me just say that I did not do it on my own. In my darkest hour, I needed to find the strength to put up my hand and say, I need help. And that didn't all come from my partner at the time, my now husband. It didn't all come from my sisters and my mum and dad and my brother. There were different roles that played. If I was to think about it, I probably had a very core group team of about 5 people helping me. 5 people. 3 out of those 5 were professional people. To help me with my mindset, to keep me calm, to keep me on track, and to keep me present. At different times of the week, I would utilize those people. So I guess my point is that while it's easy to gloss over things, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge my father and the, you know, the journey that he's been on and the influence that he's had on my life. And also just really clearly acknowledge the mental illness issues that we do have in our society. And while I encourage anybody that has things that they need to talk about to put up their hand, I also encourage the rest of us that don't to be empathetic, to go out of our way to help if we can, to listen, to shut up and listen. And I also wanted to really acknowledge and to just bring to the forefront the fact that while I do not suffer from, you know, a mental illness or depression, I've obviously had some significant issues in my life, and I did not do it alone. I absolutely 100% had help. And of course it starts with us to put up our hand and to step up and to ask. So please do. If you Google Di Foster, if you Google or if you search Di Foster on Facebook, you will find me. I'm very accessible. And I'm putting my hand up to listen.
Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. If you'd like to see or hear more from me, then you can find me on Facebook, Diane Foster, Foster Wellness, and on Instagram, Foster Wellness. You can find me on LinkedIn under Diane Foster. If you'd like to get in touch with me, diane@fosterwellness.co.nz. My website is fosterwellness.co.nz. I'm always up for speaking gigs, mentoring clients, and workshops. So get in touch, even if you're just interested in having a chat. And of course, every Wednesday, 11 a.m. here on Plains FM. And the Foster Wellness podcast is available on plainsfm.org.nz and of course iTunes. And you can also each week find a link to the podcast on social media. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you get to foster some wellness each and every day, especially today. ¶¶